Coming up on Blind Abilities, Dr. Denise Robinson.
Basically, the premise is really getting more instruction to these kids, not just instruction, but technology instruction. I'll give a 1% to 2% that there's something out there that I might not be able to access. And if you want to challenge me, absolutely email me the site and I will tell you whether it's accessible or not. If you want something that works phenomenally well, get a new laptop.
What kind of computer do you have?
My major computers are...
Could you be a little more passionate, please?
Yeah. Teaching is a passion of mine, let me tell you. Holy banole.
Welcome to Blind Abilities. I'm Jeff Thompson.
And I'm Cheryl McIntosh.
And I'm Pete Lane. Our guest this morning is Dr. Denise M. Robinson. Dr. Robinson is a TVI and PhD and a teacher and instructor of the visually impaired. Good morning, Dr. Robinson. How are you this morning?
Good morning. I'm doing very well. Thank you.
It's so nice to finally chat with you in person. I personally have enjoyed so many of your YouTube videos. It's really great to speak with you this morning.
Thanks.
Why don't we just get started and tell our audience what it is that you offer to the blindness community?
I've been teaching the blind in the standard mode probably for 25 years. And as I was driving around 3,000 miles a month, overseeing 25 school districts, I kept thinking there has got to be a different way. And if you go to any conferences, you're going to hear TVIs tell you the extent that they drive in order to see really just a handful of students. And unfortunately, we're very short of TVIs, not just in this country, but all over. And it really comes down to how can we get more instruction to these kids? It's just really difficult for them to stay up in school because they're not getting the instruction that they need. So about 5 years ago, I decided to go out on my own and teach remotely so I could actually teach more instruction to more students on a daily basis. And I had been developing in my head, oh my gosh, for decades on how to go about, you know, doing this particular type of instruction. And even before I began my PhD program, I had my dissertation written. And it was actually my chair who told me I had to shorten everything. Otherwise, I'd be writing my dissertation for the next 10 years. But basically, the premise is really getting more instruction to these kids, not just instruction, but technology instruction. Braille, absolutely, very important. All the other blind skills, I'm not negating any of that. But it's technology that allows these students to access the world and really do anything that the sighted kids can do. And that was my whole point. I wanted to show not just the student, but the school and all around that they could truly tackle anything that the school was doing. So, and not only that, I just don't teach the K through 12. I teach adults right on the job, and the TVIs are actually in the classroom. And then they're learning right along with the students. The difference in the way I teach is I do not come in with a plan. Now, I have a plan, always.
Right.
But basically, I teach applicably. So if the child comes in and says, in math class today, we have to do XY line plot graphs. So they guide every lesson. And so I take them to Excel, and they do just as sophisticated graph as all the other kids. And they learn how to take out that information from Excel and, of course, put it into Word and finish out their whole math assignment doing every type of fancy symbol and mathematic equation that is asked of them. If the child comes in and says, okay, we need to do a PowerPoint, that is what is taught. Anything the child needs, they learn. And what I discovered is, because I'm often asked, how do your students learn so fast? It's because it's all applicable. It's immediate knowledge that they need. And so they're even more excited about learning it. And then, of course, remembering it. And when adults come to me and they need instruction, and the interesting thing is most employers will pay for this. They pay for the instruction and the adult says, I need to know how to do, you know, whatever, and I teach it. Same with a college student. They don't know how to write an APA paper. That's what we're doing. So it's teaching how to do the research and how to cite it correctly. And of course, make your bibliography and everything else that goes along with it. So that truly I've discovered is the key. If you teach applicably, oh my gosh. And it's also using multiple tools. I always tell them you need to know more than one talking software program. You need to have more than one tool. The iPhone is incredibly powerful. They need to have that down, NVDA, JAWS. They need to have VoiceOver down because it depends on the app that's required by the school. The app might only be accessible on an iPhone. And if there's a choice between a blind student getting an iPhone or an iPad, it's almost always iPhone. They really don't need that visual display. And the iPhone is incredibly powerful.
Absolutely.
They can actually take the iPhone and a little braille display to class, be taking notes on that, and then send their work to their computer and then finish it out with all the fancy formatting and graphs and tables and pictures. Even with my completely blind students, they are going to learn how to do great internet searching on pictures and downloading the correct picture for whatever they're working on. Uh-huh. And they do it all by themselves. And then, I should say, they get to the point where they can do it all by themselves and they still have me check their work and the pictures and the videos that they've selected are right on. And it's just a particular searching technique that you have to do in order to find what you want. And they learn it all. It's incredible.
Sure.
The kids just, oh my gosh, I can't wait to wake up and teach. It's just become more exciting. Yeah, it's incredible. But
definitely,
that's basically the background of where I've been and now what I'm doing now.
So you had mentioned that employers will pay for your services. How would one go about doing that?
Well, what the blind person does is they'll go to either vocational rehabilitation and they will either pay for the service because, of course, they want that person to stay in this job, or it'll be a combination of voc rehab and the employer, or it'll just be in the employer. You want to take the vocational rehabilitation option first, and almost always they will pay for it. They can go to their employer, depending on the employer. If it's a person already in the blind field, they will often pay part of it also. And I've even had employers pay for the instruction that the person needed. And typically, you know, if they're already that techie, and your audience is probably very techie, it's just a matter of tweaking of a new product, then they just need to learn those new commands to operate whatever software. Yeah.
Or learn the new Windows 10.
Right. Or learn the Windows 10 with Office 365. That's right. The big one right now. With a Windows 10, oh my gosh, the narrator with Windows 10 is phenomenal. And it's amazing. You know, you just get them over this little hump and the light bulb goes on. It's like, it's teaching strategies. So I always tell my students, there are tens of thousands of commands out there. Don't try to memorize every command. So I try to teach them strategies.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, so here you are, you're in a brand new site. Let's go through the strategies I've taught you of how to understand and learn about this site. And that is a big one, you know, thinking logically about anything. And then you can figure out what to do on your own. And that really is the point.
Exactly.
Like, yeah, just not memorizing a whole bunch of commands. And the kids are sponges. Oh my gosh. They learn tenfold. The guy will be sitting behind. And I've actually even had TBIs just stop the instruction with a student. And then I send them lessons. And they said, I'm just so overwhelmed because the kid learns 50 times faster than the TBI. But they're the ones, it's very important to them. They need to know how to do that Excel. So they're going to memorize those commands versus the TBIs trying to keep up or learn something typically very new to them. Because there's not a lot of tech training in the colleges. They usually brush upon, okay, here's the technology out there for the blind. Unfortunately, that doesn't help the TBIs a lot get right into the profession and then start teaching the kids how to do it.
Well, using myself as an example, when you said applicable, I learn what I need to learn on the fly. And that's all I want because I don't want to learn 25 commands if I'm only going to use two. So it seems really great that you're applicable. You're right there on the spot. That kid's going to soak it up right now.
Oh yeah. And it doesn't do any good. If you need to learn Excel and I come in with a plan of teaching you PowerPoint that day, The chances of you learning PowerPoint that day are close to nil.
Absolutely.
Because they're stressing out about this math lesson that they need to get done. Yeah. And another advantage of that is they don't have to go home and stress over how I'm going to get this work done and then sit at their computer or whatever for 3-4 hours trying to do this homework that they can't really do. They're getting their homework done. They're learning how to do it.
So is it that individualized, Doctor? If I'm a student and I'm blind and I say I'm having trouble with my math, is that the sole topic that you address? Or do you say we need to learn some other basic things too?
Well, they absolutely need to learn basic things. When I first start with a student, the first thing I teach them is the basic overall layout of a computer and the logic of it and actually how to use it. But if I've had them for a while and they come in and they say they need to learn this math lesson right. and this Excel with it, that's what they're going to learn. Now, there's always, like when you get toward the end of the week, Friday lessons. That's where I'm going to stick in those other general commands where I see they're really weak and they're not remembering those commands. And there's always downtime, you know, before vacation, holidays, there's always downtime. And so I have like, 100,000 lessons in my head. So depending on the student where I see they're weak, any of that, what you would call quote unquote downtime, that's what they're going to do. I don't create additional homework for them, but what I'll do is I actually take notes while I'm instructing them. So if they forget a particular command, they open up that email and they can go through the notes that I gave them for that day to refer back to. And then they keep that. I always tell them, don't erase anything I send you because all the key commands are in there. But I'll send additional lessons with it. Let's say we're really working on PowerPoint and we're hitting the weekend. So I will send them an extensive PowerPoint lesson so they can actually do a whole lot more. Because let me tell you, an hour and a half lesson, that goes by so whipping fast, it makes your head spin. I communicate with all their instructors. And so the instructors can ask me specific questions, or what they do is they actually give me a heads up on what the student needs. The big one is, because a lot of people don't understand what is accessibility, they're really good at sticking a piece of paper on a scanner and scanning it and saving it in PDF mode because teachers are getting the idea, okay, PDFs are accessible, and they are. A true PDF is very, very accessible, but they think if they save a scanned image in PDF that it makes it accessible.
Like a JPEG.
Exactly. We love JPEGs.
Oh, yeah. PNG.
So they will send that to me and they'll say, okay, I want the student to work on this Thursday. So the student will come in, let's say it's a Tuesday, they come in, they tell me, okay, I need to do a PowerPoint or, an MLA paper or whatever. And we start on it. And then I'll take like the last 10, 15 minutes of class and I'll say, this has to be made accessible before Thursday. And I teach the child how to make it accessible themselves, because they're going to be constantly given things that are inaccessible and they need to know how to make it accessible. And there's incredible programs. Google, there's not enough things that I can say about Google. You can literally open a JPEG in Google or other image documents and it will translate the scanned image to text. Hi world, Denise Robinson for yourtechvision.com, and today I'm going to show you one of my favorite tricks. I'm going to be showing you with a mouse because what I'm going to show you is everyone's problem. God bless those souls who put information on scanners and scan it, and it's not truly a PDF. Someone stuck it on a scanner, scanned it, and sent it. Now with my students, they're blind, they really can't access this, so this is one of the really cool tricks that I utilize with my students. It's of course great for the sighted world also, because let's say you have to type information in it, this is what you're going to do also. I'm going to use Converter for Drive Document. This is one of my favorite Google apps. So I'm going to right click on this. If you're using talking software, you're going to hit your applications key.
I noticed that you're heavy into Google. Is that a recent development that Google has made some recent strides in accessibility?
And the reason why I'm heavily into Google is because all the schools are. So if you ever see videos that it seems like, oh my gosh, Denise emmed off into whatever particular area, it's because all the schools are.
Right. That's great.
Yeah, videos, not just for my students or the team or whomever, but it's just because people need that. That's the emails I'm getting. It's like, how do you do? Da, 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 da. How, so those are the feedback I'm getting from people also. So Google started out like, oh my gosh, it was the bread and butter of everything. And then you can tell when new designers come in, it fell to the bottom of the pit. And then you're like, holy Benoli, what happened to accessibility in Google? Well, I look at it as a phenomenal challenge, and I'm going to come up with a plethora and a myriad of other commands to make this work for me. The point being in that I love a good challenge because, once again, programs will be great for a while. And everybody gets into the commands that are needed for it, and they do it, and then all of a sudden, the commands change. And that's typical, not just of Google, that's everything, every type of website. For example, Google, like 3 days ago, changed several major commands from insert F7 being links into your insert F5. And if people don't know this yet, almost everything was under insert F7. Well, a huge majority have moved to insert F5 now. And then, of course, your headings list, insert F6, not used as much, but insert F5 is the first go-to command now for internet searching. It's incredible how many commands they've moved there. So it's discovering those little things. And then, of course, how to route that cursor, how to move that mouse across your page when key commands won't even get you there. Well, you learn how to control that mouse and walk it across the page. The power is incredible. Yeah, so once again, it goes back to teaching those strategies. Okay, this command worked like an hour ago, and now what do you do? I've literally taught a child, we were in Pearson Math, and that had always been incredibly inaccessible. And about a year ago, they really started working on that. And I was teaching her the commands to go through how to access her math book online. Okay, Kaylee, just let's let everybody know what we're doing. We're in Pearson Math Book, and in general, Pearson is pretty inaccessible. This year, it's a hint better, and we're going to take you through and show you what low-vision kids can do. So let's go to your open book.
Dialogue.
Oh, there you go. Insert F7. Okay. Now, go ahead. Just hit S for student resources. Literally, by the time she had gotten out of the book, we're talking 10 minutes, and gone back to repeat the commands had changed. So you could tell someone was online adjusting those commands. And people don't realize how fast technology is changing. I am on the computer, at least 10 hours a day. I used to do 12, 14-hour days, which were, okay, I had to stop that. I'm a slightly type A personality, so, you know, I'm on the computer a lot. So I'm test driving and constantly challenging every site. So that happens more often with me because I'm on it constantly, so I see it. And then I know what command for the kids to hit. They'll hit it and they'll go, this command's not working anymore. And then what I do, instead of immediately tell them the command has changed, I'll say, well, my guess is they did a website update. Tell me the options that you're going to take in order to figure out that new command. So it's once again going back to teaching the strategies of how to tackle technology.
Do you communicate with Google and other website developers at all to alert them of what the impact is of those types of changes and the frequency of those changes?
Yeah, I used to a lot. And the remarks that I would get from them is, please go to our blog and make comments in there on it, and we'll try to address da 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 da, whatever. What I discovered, which was much faster, is just figure out the
work around it.
Exactly, to work around it. Because what I absolutely know, is websites are going to constantly change. So what is not working well one day, I just tell the students, hang on, I can guarantee you someone's going to be working on this, because accessibility is a big item. Google is specifically really, really working on it. Amazon has been great on it. So there's particular companies that are doing a phenomenal job. Microsoft constantly, oh my gosh, Windows 10 is like, oh, it's beautiful. It's something to behold.
So I hear, right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, then why wouldn't they create some sort of an advisory board with people like you or other members of the disability community to discuss these changes before they're made, or at least give you some communication?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Right. Well,
they have started something. I know Cindy Bennett is working out there with them.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. They actually have started that more so, I would say, in the last 1 to 2 years. What makes total common sense has not in the past typically worked. And you think, well, why? Yeah, they are. Mac has is really trying to get somebody in there, or has, as has Microsoft. And I think this is the reason why we're seeing better products out there, is because the major companies are really saying, okay, they needed someone more than a sighted person to help them. I mean, I used to, when I was starting out, oh my gosh, call the, you know, quote unquote accessibility department of whatever company. They had no idea. They're clueless. And so I thought, okay, I need to take this on myself. I will figure this stuff out myself, because truly, I mean, I remember when the iPhone first came out, oh my gosh, you go to their quote unquote accessibility, it was laughable. They could not tell me anything on it. And that was really true for a lot of companies, because they had sighted people, and God bless their souls, at least they had sighted people in there, but you could hear them flipping through a manual. Yeah, you can tell how long I've been in here in the business. Now I know they are flipping through the internet trying to find the answer to, you know, my question. Well, I can do that myself. What we were hoping, of course, that we can call these accessibility people and they would have the answer for us.
Now, Cheryl is in an online university and she uses a lot of technology. Do you have anything that you work with, Cheryl, that you'd like to address?
Well, I think, as you pointed out, it's mostly just getting a hold of the right person that knows what's going on. I've had a lot of issues with a browser that I have to use. It's called Lockdown Browser for exams. And I found it to be inaccessible, but it really apparently is accessible, but it's the professor has to do some stuff on their end. So just getting a hold of the person to tell me that took a year.
Yeah.
So I wish there was just a better way of doing it. You had stated that you were from Tennessee, which they've actually made a lot of strides in the last few weeks that I've been reading about in terms of colleges, making stuff accessible from the get-go rather than making accommodation later. So I hope to see more of that in the future.
Yeah. And in your instance, and there's a lot of platforms that people believe are inaccessible and they're actually not. And what people do is they actually send me a site. Now, all my school districts absolutely do this. They send me the site and they'll say, okay, this is completely accessible. And they will tell me that. And I actually discover more times than not that it's completely accessible. Like Cheryl, if you and I were working together, you would send me that with your user and your password. And of course, this is already written into the contract about security and whatnot. And I would go through the site and then I would tell you what, teach you the commands to actually get through it. You just have to do it a different way. It's thinking outside the box. And that just happens to be my gift. And we're all gifted with different things, but I can sit there and just start typing different commands and think, okay, the typical normal command is not working here. My guess is that's probably what was going on with that browser is, okay, these are not typical normal commands. How do I think outside the box in order to get to where I need to be in order to do something? So out there, this is for your audience. Any trainer that tells you, oh, this is just inaccessible, you're not going to be able to access it, that is incorrect information. Typically, there's a way. So I'll give a 1 to 2% that there's something out there that I might not be able to access. And if you want to challenge me, absolutely email me the site and I will tell you whether it's accessible or not.
There you go. The Dr. Robinson challenge.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
What I'm hearing from you is that a student should have a lot of tools in their toolbox, whether it be in using multiple browsers, multiple screen readers, but having a tool that they think they can use and actually use them.
Yeah. You cannot do this with one tool. You really kind of need to use a combination, because depending on the school, typically an iOS device, and this is my own preference, like I said, because there's so many different things that you can do with PCs and their talking software, but you need to know several different talking softwares. Some schools will only use Chrome. And so it used to be you had to use Chrome Vox with it. Well, in certain aspects, you still do in order to get to a particular network setting. So it's not just sitting there going, okay, I'm only going to use a Mac and VoiceOver. Well, if you're in K-12 and you get to a job that only does PCs, you're going to be, or college, you're going to be in trouble. So most of my students, or a lot of them, they're using a Mac, iPad, iPhone, PC, and Braille Note, and a plethora of other things. But once they discover the power of a PC, and then, of course, different talking software programs, they're using their Macs mostly for music now.
Yeah, and other, or social.
You know, other entertainment. But the whole point is, I want you to at least get comfortable with VoiceOver on any device. But the most used tools are really iPhone, Braille display, PC computer, and then several different talking software programs.
Yeah, I found out that most people will be on the social networking. That's where Apple comes in big time.
Yeah.
But I know a lot of people who will use their iPhone and a Braille display to take notes in class and have that type of thing. But if you're going to go into the workplace or you're going to go onto a government site, that PC is almost the only way to go.
Oh, it is. And if you look at the business world, the majority of use is a PC. So a PC is like a must learn product. And right now, I would say the must learn are really a PC and an iPhone. If I go to a school and they say, okay, we have really limited funds, well, the iPhone needs to come from the parents, but right now with all the laws in place, the school usually buys the computer. So the PC and the iPhone are like the must have, you must learn this. And then everything else will be supplemental. And the more you can get your hands on, the better it is.
Well, I was astonished because in Minnesota here, I was invited to go to a teen group meeting and stuff like that. And some districts, depending on which district you're in, they're handing out Chromebooks.
Yeah. Don't we love that? And I have a couple of districts like that. Well, it's a non-negotiable with me. And fortunately, I'm in a very fortunate place where I can actually be very strict about it, mainly because districts are contacting me because they really want my services. And right off the bat, I will say, this is what the child must have. I don't care if they're handing out Chromebooks for the whole district. That's a moot point. What is going to be accessible to this child is going to be a PC. I don't want to have to teach them a piece of technology where you are troubleshooting constantly in order to make something work. And God bless Chromebox. Now, let me don't down that too much, other than it's an incredibly slow talking software program. I don't want to teach the child the slowest way to do something. And a lot of things are accessible, but it's a matter of speed. It really is. We've all sat in a classroom, and I don't care what classroom it is, the teacher is not going to say, oh, just a second, while Chromebox scans that page for that blind student over there so they can find the option that they need.
Well, it's just astonishing that two kids could be living a block apart, but they're in different districts. One has an Apple product for certain things that works for classroom note taking and all that. The other is beta testing a Chromebook or something.
Yeah.
Basically, they're struggling with it because it's not there yet. They will be probably someday, but not yet.
Right. And while you've got me, and I'm going to say this because a lot of TDIs or schools have gone to this with their blind students, they are only teaching the iPad. That, I can tell you, will end in the hugest travesty for the child. I've actually had kids go to camps. I have kids, all the students are going to camps during the summer. And the students know the iPad, the iPhone, and or Braille. And the student went to the camp and the kids were actually making fun of her because she used a PC computer. They only knew how to use iPads. We're talking every single kid in this camp. She was the only one that used PC, the only one who read Braille. Now, even my low vision kids, and God bless low vision sight, I'm not downing anything, but a lot of teachers are taking a low vision student and they're trying to teach them all these low vision techniques. That's great. I do the same thing with my low vision kids, but that is the slowest body part compared to the ears on doing information. And you know what? I had nothing to lose. I truly believe this. And so decades ago, I just decided I'm going to teach all my low vision kids Braille and talking software, how to access a computer. And believe it or not, my low vision kids will tell you this, Braille is a whole lot faster than trying to stick your nose on large print and read it. And their computer, if they want to get work done, the talking software and their ears work a whole lot faster than enlarging everything on that screen, you know, and using all those low vision tools, which they do know. So if they need to look at a graph, I'm going to have them access what body part works best. If they need to access a picture or a graph, Then I teach them how to do, and they know how to enlarge it and whatnot. But if they need to get work done, their ears work 10 times faster than those poor vision eyes. So use the vision for things that you really want to see and need to. But when it comes to work, their ears and their fingers will work so much faster. Getting back to only teaching the child an iPad, you cannot tell me one job out there or a college that says, yes, an iPad will take you every single place you need to go, and that's all you need to do this job. You cannot tell me one job that requires only an iPad of use.
I 100% agree with you, because I was a low vision person and I used Zoom Text and I never learned JAWS, and it right. was so slow to do everything. And then I started to lose my sight midway through college, and I had got an iPad and I was able to do most of my stuff on there. Then I went over to the Mac. But day one of my internship, I had to use JAWS, and I had never used JAWS before, and it was a nightmare. So I 100% agree with you on that, because you have to know more than just the Mac in those types of settings. And I really wish somebody had taught me JAWS years and years and years ago, because I think I would have been a lot faster.
Doctor, I'd like to segue, if you don't mind, to your story, your backstory. I understand that you actually lost your vision earlier in your life. Can you talk a little bit about that for us?
Yeah, that's a big question I have. How did I get into the field?
Right.
Well, when I was going into my last semester, so we're talking Thanksgiving, my eyes, both of my eyes decided to hemorrhage. So the backstory on that is I actually went into a coma when I was 16, and that's how they discovered I was a diabetic. I grew up in a family that the religion didn't believe in doctors. That's the reason why I got so far to a coma. And then I, of course, had no idea how to take care of this, nor did my parents. Because it was a medical condition, but they did finally get me to a hospital when I was in the coma. And, you know, I was eventually brought back to life. And so let me tell you, if you have diabetes, you better learn to take care of it. I did not know how to take care of it. Okay, so I had to take shots. It was all a lot of misnomer. I mean, if you really know nothing about the medical field, and I really didn't, never watched any TV, knew nothing about any of that. So completely uncontrolled diabetes. And well, one of the ramifications is sight loss. Oh my gosh, the incredible pain in my eyes. And I happened to have a girlfriend visiting me, and she happened to be in the medical field. And she said, well, I think I need to take you to the emergency room. And the doctor, it was 2 seconds, looked into my eyes and said, I needed to immediately see an ophthalmologist or retinologist. And of course, the next day he got me in and he said, well, your eyes have completely hemorrhaged. And of course, my eyes were actively going from blurry to blurrier to blurriest to, you know, basically light and dark. And then he immediately sent me to a retinologist, and I started a laser surgery. The laser surgeries, and many people may not know this, if you're in a smaller town, there are lots of different lasers. Of course, I didn't know this. Green being, it's like a dull knife going through your head. Well, they were trying to cauterize these blood vessels. I had way too much blood in my vitreous. And of course, I'm not sure how much he knew about the retina. I knew nothing about what was going on, other than I would pass out every single time he would try to do even a few lasers. So once again, she started doing research, and one of the best retinologists in the country happened to be in Henry Ford Hospital in Detroit at the time. Dr. Nussbaum, oh my gosh, phenomenal. I would love for him to hear this. I, of course, couldn't do school. I actually had to do my finals auditorily because my vision was so poor, couldn't write or anything, and knew nothing about the blind world. As you can probably believe, I wasn't the happiest of campers the next few months. You know, you have to go, I don't know if you have to, but I did go through the, oh my gosh, I can't do anything. I have no idea what to do. Once again, I still
have to.
Yeah. I've never met a blind person, you know, they didn't even know what that was. I could knit. You don't need a whole lot of vision to knit. And actually you don't need any vision to knit. And I had knitted all my life, so I knew how to do this fairly well. And my girlfriend said, why don't you come to college? She was taking night classes. Why don't you come to college with me, you know, at least for a change of venue instead of sitting in this rocking chair all day long and doing nothing. Put me in the back of the hub. And it was a very, very long room. And if you've ever read that part in the Bible where Jesus is healing the blind man and he says, what do you see now? And he says, tall walking people, they look like trees. Yeah, I know what that is. So it happened to be a Wednesday night, and a whole bunch of, you know, let's say, trees were walking into this room, and it happened to be a church group. Now, I really knew very little about all the God and Jesus and love and all of that. So I'm back in the room, and I'm sure steam was coming out of my head, because let me tell you, I felt like I was on 1,000 degrees fire. I was just the anger that was coming out of me about hearing about this loving God and how he, you know, loves us and all that. And let me tell you, I didn't give him very long to talk. And I stood up, and I could still see me. I'm gripping my knitting needles so hard. Oh my gosh. And I can tell you, I don't remember what I said, but I know it was a whole lot of me. And he just said back to me, "Why do you feel that way?" Oh my gosh. Instant, incredible, just the sorrow of my life. And eyes hemorrhaging was the least of it. It really was. I mean, my soul was so broken from my past. And they all came over and started talking and hearing my story. And every orifice was leaking when oozing with tears and water and snot and you name it. It was just not a pretty sight. And my story just poured out. And they said, "Well, can we lay hands on you and pray for you?" All these hands came in and started touching me and one by one praying. The healing of the eyes was just one part of it. I mean, my whole story was just of a life of just absolute brokenness. Oh my gosh, the peace that came over me was so incredible. In the next few days, it was like, okay, I need to learn blind skills. At that point, I mean, I really didn't understand, you know, this great healing power or anything like that. It's like, I need to learn blind skills. And it was over a 10-year process. Slowly but surely, I started getting my sight back. And it wasn't just my eyes that were failing. I mean, if you don't take care of your diabetes, it's a whole body thing, let me tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, this is not a disease to mess around with, whether you're type 1 or type 2. It's just something that will actually kill you very, very slowly in a very, very painful way. So it was over a 10-year process, and slowly but surely, I started getting my sight back. But as I began the Braille, I had the most incredible teacher, Ted Lennox, if you're out there too. Woo! He's like, I'm sure, late 80s, early 90s now. Dr. Nemeth was also part of one of my master's thesis programs. So I met all these incredible blind people. But Ted Lennox was one of my instructors, and he had been blind all his life, and he really gave me a vision for what the blind could do. The Apple II GS had just come out. Woo! Or the Apple II. Oh my gosh. Sit around and dream about what this technology meant. So we could dream even with the Apple II. Oh my gosh, we could dream with the Apple, these little Echo boxes. And he just gave me a vision for what blind people could do. He was incredibly independent. He did everything. And it's like, that's what I'm going to do too. And this is where one of those instances where I completely get God can take what Satan needs for evil. So Satan just thought he was just going to do me in, you know, right from the get-go. But this is one of those times where if you look at something really evil or these tests and trials that we're going to, you can either make it work for your good or for bad. If you get in there and you complain and just moan and groan, that test and trial is not going to do you any good. Or you learn from it and learn what you need to learn from it. I had no idea I was going to get my sight back. And so in the middle of this, of all my blind training, it's like, I'm going to become a teacher of the blind. I love this. I love the Braille. I love the technology. All of it. I loved all of it. And that's how I became a teacher of the blind.
Earlier, you mentioned that, what was it, 5 years ago or something, that you decided to go a different route a little bit. You said it was all in your head. How easy was it to extrapolate what's in your mind, in your head, to bring it down to a reality that you're doing today?
Let me tell you, I have really applied this Bible now to my life. And this was a long process. I mean, we're talking at least 10 years. I had phenomenal instructors along the way. Ted Lennox, Dr. Nemeth. If I thought about more of a, you know, I could name more people in the field who, Fred Gazzoni at APH. Oh my gosh, Fred Gazzoni. Oh, my lifeblood.
Is that Fred's head?
Yes!
There you go.
How about that?
He was, oh my gosh, Fred. Oh, he was my lifeline for years when I first began teaching and learning about, you know, by this time we had DOS. You know, eventually, I know, I'm really aging myself.
JAWS 3.1.
Yeah, and we had the Braille and Speak. And Fred was my lifeline to learning this stuff. Oh my gosh, I think I called him 3-4 times a week. And so I had incredible instructors. So there's not enough I can say about getting incredible instructors into your life. I can't remember your question now because, of course, I'm dreaming about all these wonderful guys who have helped me along the line.
It was, you made a comment like 5 years ago, you had so much in your head that you wanted to get it out.
Yeah.
And how was it to get, I know there's a lot goes on in the head, but to funnel it down to a reality piece, how'd that work for you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then starting your own business by yourself. I mean, and you look at all the statistics and all your, you know, great friends telling you, you know, this is never going to work. Yeah. We love the support out there, right?
I need this advice.
Yeah. So you need to really funnel some of that advice. It goes back to really listening to what God's plan is for your life. He has a great plan for all of us. And it's really listening to that plan. And it needs to be in His time also. If we try to push something ahead, then it's all in our effort. And a lot of times it will fail. So it's going out when I was really giving the prompting. So we're talking going through my master's thesis, all about my blind programming, going through my dissertation, all about blind programming. So I am fine-tuning this over a decade. Oh my gosh, fine-tuning. I started with one student with the remote access because there's a lot of kids way out there and TBIs can't even reach them. Or they're in districts and the TBI, if the TBI actually says to the director, I really can't do this, can we hire a specialist? And directors don't know. This is really a special field because TBIs really don't have the skills yet. Some or a lot of them are really starting to gain it and trying to understand it, but a lot don't have it. And if they're honest with the director will say, yeah, let's hire this person on. It's 1 hour a day. And then I'm supporting the TBI as well as the blind student. So that's what I did. So I went down to 4 days a week and started just with one student. And there's a lot of problem solving that goes along with it. So I was so grateful that I started out small like this to really learn the nuances and the skill of remote training and doing it well. I did not want to go in and do a crappy job. The biggest issue is if you're working in a school district, a lot of times you're coming in with a general plan and teaching the students. I didn't want to teach like that. I wanted to teach applicably. I wanted to do it my way. And I knew the only way I could do that is to get out on my own. Because if you're working for a school district, you have to follow their agenda. And so that one student did great. And even before, I would think I was into it 3 or 4 months and another district got a hold of me and said, hey, I heard you were doing this. Can you take on this other kid? So I had two students by the end of the year. And I knew this was going to be doable because I already had a lot of other districts getting a hold of me, wanting me to take them on. So I knew by the second year, I would have a full caseload. So I went ahead and quit my quote unquote day job and went into this full time. And so even the first year I was doing well, by the second year I was bringing in more income than my husband. It took off very, very fast. And now I actually have to turn down students. Unfortunately, I hired two other teachers. One went into a different job this year. He was sad to lose. So I'm always looking for people to hire, but people who really believe that they're good at text, and almost all the TBIs will say they understand the computer well until you take the mouse away from them. Mm-hmm. Understanding the computer well in the blind field is truly working the products that are used the most in the world. And that's what I look at. I look at if you want a job tomorrow and you are going to graduate, what do you need to know? You need to know a PC. You need to know Microsoft Office. I'm constantly looking really, every day, what's going on in the world? What's going on in the world? Making sure my kids are learning those skills.
Here's another scenario. Like in our state, our governor made an executive decision to say that we're going to hire and bring up the hiring of people with disabilities up to 7%, blah, blah, blah. It's all on paper. But when they don't support it with the tech people knowing what the heck they're talking about, you know, like someone that you're using a screen reader and that tech guy comes in and it's like he's flipping through the manual, you know?
Yeah. Making laws like that, that's great. However, I am not going to hire someone that doesn't know this, have the skills. Now, the thing is, anybody with a disability who has the skills can do anything a sighted person can do. And that's the thing. But unfortunately, we need more instructors, more tech instructors who can really teach the person how to do it. And then that 7%, That's not going to be 7%. That's going to be 15%. That's going to be 25%. You cannot make a law without the support behind it. It's great to say, yeah, we need to increase this. Yeah, but you're not going to find an employer who wants to hire this person or keep them after the law goes awry or whatever without the support, without the instruction that person needs in order to do the job.
Or the vast array of programmers that are people yes. are buying, upgrading, and accessibility is not being considered.
Yeah, and also going to the companies and saying, okay, you need it. First of all, you need to make your site accessible, but there is a whole slew of commands that need to go along with learning how to access a site, because a lot of the sites are not just, you know, you get onto it and it's just different. There's nothing basic, no basic. I mean, there's certain basic keystrokes you absolutely need to know, but every website is so different that you need to learn the particular nuances of that site to use it well. Well, every company is going to have their own site and programs. Well, someone needs to go in and teach that person how to access that. And then, yeah, person with disability is going to do great. But without the support behind it, yeah, the laws don't mean
it's much. Just a sheet of paper.
Yeah, it's a beautiful sheet of paper with a lot of great ink on it.
So do you track your students to see how successful they are after they graduate high school and go on to college?
Yeah. What's so cool about my students, they're not my students. They just happen to learn these skills. Like one is actually part of an accessibility program at the college. They immediately hired him the next year once they found out how much he knew. And he's actually helping this college make their site more accessible. And he's actually helping the other students with disabilities in the college. It's just like incredibly cool. Unfortunately, and Cheryl, you made an incredibly, people need to understand this also. Low vision doesn't necessarily stay low vision. So if you're also not teaching low vision kid those blind skills, you're really kind of mucking up their life down the road. Unfortunately, I've had a lot of brain tumor children. That's the reason why they lost their sight. So I've had quite a few pass away. Retinoblastoma, you know, there's some conditions out there that are just unfortunate game changers. So they were in college heading toward their careers and unfortunately passed away. But other kids, they're moving into their jobs and they're going through colleges. And the big thing is I always send them to training schools after Louisiana Tech, because it's phenomenal. There's other really good ones, but they always need more training because, of course, parents are typically in the mode of helping way too much. We love helping, but helping too much, not good. Yeah.
So what about people like me who lost the rest of their sight later in life, but I have kids, so I can't go to a training center? I think something like what you're doing would be helpful for me and other people like me, because I don't have the luxury of just leaving for 9 months.
Exactly. And that's what makes my training so ideal, is it's remote. And the adults are a lot more flexible than students. Like I said, I'm teaching them when they're in school. So they have, you know, I get a block period of time. So 8 o'clock in the morning is not going to change for the whole year for that kid. But adults, it's like, okay, when the kids are off to school, you've got 1 hour. And once again, voc rehab would kick in for you. And then you can say, oh, I really need to know how to do this, you know, this new browser or Windows 10 or whatever in order to, you know, keep up my job skills. And I teach you exactly what you need to know. So then you can progress to the next lesson. Yeah, that is what makes this so ideal. And it doesn't matter if the kid is way out in Timbuktu or the adult is way out in Timbuktu or what college or whatever.
You teach by telephone, right?
No, Skype. It's so incredibly accessible. It has scripts to it, so JAWS works flawlessly. NVDA, Narrator, all work great. If you want to use a slower browser, you can use a slower browser. And I have used a lot of different ones. The thing about Skype is it's free. Microsoft took it over. Bezos went to work for Microsoft, and so it's become even more accessible. And the big thing is I'm always trying to choose free options for the schools so they don't have to pay for another one, or adults that are out there, or workplaces. And Skype is so easy. So that's one of the first lessons I teach them, is how to operate Skype well.
Yeah, yeah. And it's available.
And it's available. All
it
over.
Works with the microphone right on the Mac or the PC. Or
exactly. the Mac or the PC, and that's the ideal. What's so cool is I can, you know, I'll be taking my iPad around or my iPhone. And this is another aspect to my instruction. So I have multiple monitors on my desk. The kids can Skype me. They can text me during the whole day. So if they're sitting in the classroom and they say, oh, what's the superscript command? I'm in math right now. And I can just text off to them. I'm like a birdie on their shoulder. I mean, even so, even though I only have them 1 hour a day, they still have me all day long. They get stuck on homework. It's no big deal. Pull them up, get them through their homework issue.
What a great resource you are.
Yeah, I can be out grocery shopping and they can text me and I pull it up on my iPhone and just text them back. It's great.
Well, not only the individualized regimen that you offer to the students, but you also offer focused YouTube videos. You hit a particular topic and in and out quickly.
That's exactly right. And, you know, and you'll notice with the YouTubes, they're actually students because I want people to see these are kids doing this, people.
Yes.
You don't need to be 30 years old and whatnot. These are kids. They've only had a couple years of instruction. If they can do it, you can do it too. But all those YouTube videos, you know, this was just a massive problem or a massive issue at a school district. And it's like, okay, I need to do a YouTube video to show people this is really easy to do. Yeah, that's exactly what they're directed at.
One that I like is you're teaching Braille. I thought it was on the phone, but it's obviously using Skype. And you're fluent in Braille just as the child will become soon. It's remarkable.
Oh, yeah. This is a lesson on Braille reading made simple. You want all four fingers of your hands on the Braille line. You want a slightly cupped hand and you want your wrists off the paper so you can have a nice fluid movement across the page. Keep your sentences simple. I like cats. I like cats. I like cats. It's every skill. It's not a bragging point. I just happen to be certified in just about every blind avenue there is. I always tell people I've gone to school for 49 years of my life. I'm 53. So I'm allowing my 0 through 4 years of no schooling. But I'm truly a lifelong learner. I'm constantly taking classes, constantly trying to upgrade my skills. But if I'm going to teach it, I need to be literate. Oh, yeah. So I teach every blind skill, but I do the videos for the team so the team can actually see it. But I actually have a lot of kids doing the abacus on their iPhone with Braille display, everything, every tool there is. It's on those YouTube videos.
There are hundreds. There are literally hundreds.
Yeah.
Or thousands. Am I understating it?
Well, between my website and my YouTube, it just happens to be what I happen to upload to. But between my website and my YouTube videos, and if it's not on there, I always tell people, tell me what you need, because it's the abundance of requests and how much can I get to, and I can never get to everything that's requested. But if it's a big issue already in the schools, I'll hit it first and it will be uploaded.
With your passion to stay on top of all the changes that happen all the time, now with Windows 10 coming out, you're talking about how good it is. Yeah. I'm wondering about a PC. Say someone wants to get a laptop. Should they upgrade or should they buy a new one so it works better? Is there a difference?
Thank you for asking that, Jeff. And I can already tell you, yeah, this is my opinion. And there's going to be a lot of people that will say, no, I don't believe in that. I work with just about every type of hardware out there. There is a difference, I will tell you, between hardware and how well your software will work. Now, I can tell you the things that don't work well. And the reason why so many people have them is because it's cheaper hardware. That's the Dell and Lenovo. Yes, there are workarounds. Don't get me wrong. There's a workaround to any piece of hardware. Now, if you really wanted me to get technical on it, it's like it's how the motherboard is set up with a video card and the video card intercept, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. Dell and Lenovo just don't like to share in regards to that. And so if you want more issues and more ways that you need to work around, absolutely, you can get any piece of hardware you want. If you want something that works phenomenally well, and with Windows 10, get a new laptop. Because programs are more demanding every couple months. You need, I tell everybody, minimum, I love HP. There's other really good ones, Toshiba, Samsung is good, Bio. So there's several hardware that are really good. I am just a huge preference for HP. HP has an Envy outlet right now, laptop, and my students are getting them. But even the families call them wow computers. Because the parents are watching these kids just like fly a million miles an hour across these computers with like virtually no issues because they work so well. GeForce video card, You want a good video card? Yeah, you're going to have to pay more for it. But the GeForce video card, yep, it's the most expensive video card, but it is a rockin' video card.
That's a gamer's piece of equipment, isn't it?
It is! Because talking software works off the video cards. People don't get that. People do not understand that. Well, some people. You're a lot of people in your audience.
Could you be a little more passionate, please?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Why? Where's your enthusiasm? Come on.
That's a mundane subject for me. Yeah, teaching is a passion of mine, let me tell you. But SSD, oh my gosh, go with an SSD. Get rid of those hard drives. Minimum 16 gigs of RAM. If you constantly update, well, you're going to be updating. You might be putting some more RAM in there. Yeah, you could exchange a hard drive for an SSD, but you're still going to have older parts. If you want something that's just, right off the block, start new, Windows 10, a piece of equipment that's going to work great with any talking software because it's going to be more than JAWS. A narrator, holy banole, in Windows 10, ice cream on top of cake. It's that good. Firefox. Get Firefox. Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm.
What kind of computer do you have?
HP. I have several. I have a Mac, but my major computers are HP. I have a tiny little laptop that's a tiny little HP. I have a Samsung, but I typically only buy HP.
You said that, the Envy.
The Envy, yeah, HP Envy laptop out. If you want the stats, I will actually forward it to you and you can put it out on your podcast, what my students call the wow computer, because it just works so phenomenal.
I hope
HP just sees some kickbacks on all these.
As we wind this up, Doctor, you've given us a last count about 39 very clear, passionate messages. But if you had to leave our audience with one single message, what would that be?
It is absolutely the utilization of different tools. You can do really anything you want. And don't let anybody come up and tell you that you can't because you're blind. It's just a different way. You're just going to be doing it a different way, but you will be able to do anything that a sighted person can do. Or, if you have any disability, you're just going to do it a different way. Yeah.
Very convincing message.
Well, thank you.
Dr. Denise M. Robinson, your website is yourtechvision.com, and you have a wealth of information. And what we haven't touched on is that you have individual training modules. I'm browsing it now. There are about 8 or 10 Take Control of JAWS lessons. They run about $4.99 a piece. You've got a world of resources, your YouTube videos, your website, and your one-on-one instructions. We have no doubt that our audience will find something of benefit from Dr. Denise M. Robinson. Jeffrey, any further questions from you?
Well, I think they got to put the doctor in their own toolbox too.
I would agree. She's probably your best single tool.
She's accessible.
Yes, absolutely.
I am accessible.
Cheryl, any further questions?
No, I think we've hit on mostly everything.
Yeah. Dr. Robinson, thank you so much for chatting with us. We really appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. And I'll see you in the virtual world.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much. Have a great day. Cheryl, Jeff, and I would like to thank Dr. Robinson for sharing her significant expertise and her obvious passion for educating the blind. For more podcasts with a blindness perspective, check us out on the web at www.blindabilities.com, on Twitter at blindabilities, or check out our Blind Abilities Facebook group. If you have questions or suggestions, shoot us an email at info@blindabilities.com. Thanks so much for listening and have a great day.
When we share
what we see through each other's eyes, we can then begin to bridge the gap
between the limited expectations
and the
realities
of blind abilities.
Of blind abilities.